We're hoping for a TEACH grant to help board members with technology at some point. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the March 2nd regularly scheduled San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board meeting. The board met in closed session. And discussed the following items. We consulted regarding... I know why. Sorry. There. We've discussed in closed session a anticipated litigation, gave direction to staff. We had a follow-up on student discipline matters, and we had a conference with negotiators regarding negotiations with our employee groups, and direction was given to staff. With that, our first item on our agenda is consensus on the order of business. Let's see, do we have any? We had one issue related to the truancy for Dr. Mutakovich.
Yes, please, Sir President. We would like to ask that report actually was to be listed under the action discussion, and we'd just ask that it be at the top of the action discussion list instead of as a report.
I didn't actually understand that.
You didn't?
It's right here.
Oh, excellent. The clerk has helped me, and many board members have a problem with that. Okay. Then we'll take that action and move it to the beginning of the ahead of item 7 in the action consent. If anybody's here to speak on that item, action discussion. So it'll be item right after item 6, right?
Okay.
Or before item? Okay, before item 6. Thank you. And if anybody is here who wants to speak on that item and can't wait, you're certainly welcome to do so during unscheduled public comment. I've been a little ill, so please bear with me. There's a lot of it going around. Then, let's see, approval of the minutes. We'll entertain a motion.
There we go. I'll move approval of the minutes to February 16th.
Second.
Discussion, please.
Go ahead, Mr. Angel. Phil.
Thank you. On item number 4, resolution, I was not available for that part of the meeting, and it says has me voting aye. I would gladly vote aye. It was a great resolution, but thank you.
We will make that change the minutes. And Mr. Buckman.
As much as I would have, in item 14, as much as I would have liked to have attended Morro Bay High School's career day, I was busy, so I was only able to attend Los Osos Middle School's. But thanks for the extra credit.
I'm not. Okay, so we have those two changes. Any features? Is picking up some money later in the agenda, too, so we've got them out there hustling. It was a donation. It's a very good thing. I commend them. Go ahead, Terry.
Am I on now? Push the button. Turns red. I'm good to go. Okay. It's very nice to be in front of the board again for the spring 2010 TEACH grant cycle. We are granting $8,739 as our part of our long-term effort to support classroom programs and projects benefiting the children of the San Luis Obispo Coastal School District. I do want to let the board know tonight that we are partnering with the San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation. We are establishing an operating account or a pass-through account, which will allow us to accept donations and make them immediately available as part of our grant cycles. So as opposed to our past fundraising efforts, which have mainly been used to grow our endowment, we're now going to be able to offer donors the ability to contribute directly to the grant process. So we're really excited about that, and hopefully it will allow us to actually increase the amount that we're able to grant each year. So,
Terry, does that mean that the donor would be able to specifically donate to
all or a portion, all or a portion of their donation? They can allocate it between the two different purposes, or all to one, or whichever way they choose. So we're excited about that. This cycle, we had a real winner in the grant category, and that was San Luis Obispo High School. They accounted for the vast majority of our grants. So whatever Mr. Jones has done to encourage his teachers to take advantage of our grant application, he's been very, very, very successful. So in keeping with what we've been doing the last few times, I'm going to invite the teachers that are here who are grant recipients to come up and introduce themselves and explain to the board what kind of grant they received and what the purpose of that grant is. And we're going to start with Gail Brocktrup from Morro Bay High School. Okay, she'll be our first grant recipient for the evening. And then for those teachers that aren't able to be here tonight, I'll tell you about their grants.
Thank you. So I'm Gail Brocktrup from Morro Bay High School, and this is my first time being granted a TEACH grant, and I'm really appreciative. Thank you. And I'm being awarded $261.80 to purchase two levels of a reading program called Read Naturally. I teach special education, I don't know if I told you that, at Morro Bay High School, and this year I have several students who have been using the Read Naturally program, and we did not have it at Morro Bay High School. And I found out that the English department does have it, but they were missing some of the levels that I needed, and I was having to drive over to Los Osos Middle School and borrow a couple of discs at a time, and so I thought it would be really handy to have, you know, my own set. So with this $261.80, I'm going to buy two partial grade levels so that with the English department set, we'll have everything from first grade through, I don't know how high they go, but anyway, we'll have a complete set. So thank you.
Hello, I'm Ed Harris, and I'm the band booster president representing Sharon Jeske, our music teacher. And we have received $800 for transportation to our spring trip to Arizona. We're going to go to Arizona State University, do a workshop there with the professors in the music department. We'll be performing with other groups over there, as well as do some sightseeing, and this is going to help with our transportation, and we really appreciate that, because you can imagine this is pretty expensive and not all our kids can afford it, but we want to make sure that everybody is going to go. So appreciate the generosity. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Amanda Gibson, and then Pete Phillips and I, we both teach marine biology out at Slo High School, and we will be taking our marine students on a field trip out to the abalone farm, as well as hopefully to do some tide pooling. In marine biology, we do a lot of specific organisms, learning about them, learning to name them, and it'll just be really great to actually take the kids out to see more than just a skeleton, more than just a preserved sample in a jar, but to see all those specimens in their natural habitats and to learn more about farming those ocean resources and learning to preserve maybe some species that are extinct, not quite extinct, but are low out in the ocean, but that we can still eat abalone, even though we can no longer dive for them. So, thank you. Grant.
Hi, my name's John Weiss, and I teach in the program for emotionally disturbed students at San Luis Obispo High School. It's a therapy-based program for students who can't access the curriculum because of an inability to regulate their emotions and, you know, various types of maladaptive behavior. And doing group therapy today, I told the students that I was very nervous because I had to tell the school board that I was going to spend a grant on video games and iPods for reinforcement. But it's going to a really great use to help motivate our students to exhibit pro-social behaviors, and they need a lot of motivation. So thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Kristen Foz. I teach at San Luis Obispo High School. I teach sign language and English and peer communications, and I love it. It's my old school, so you can't go wrong there. I was awarded from the Teach Foundation. Thank you very much, Terry and everyone. $400 to take my students to Deaf Day at Disneyland, actually, this Saturday. It's the fourth time we've had an opportunity to go on a Deaf Day field trip sponsored by Orange County Deaf Association. For the students to get a good feel for what it's like to be immersed in deaf culture and the deaf community at a local theme park, obviously Disneyland this year. That what the theme park does for the deaf community is they set up interpreters at every single ride and every single venue and theater program, and they allow deaf people to interact both in English, sign language, pidgin sign, and signed exact English, all the varieties of sign language, so they can kind of come together as one rather than feel ostracized. So it's a really good opportunity for my students to get a good feel and put their skills of sign language culture and linguistics to use. So thank you so much for everything.
Good evening. My name is Sandy Sack, and this is my partner, Linda Smith, and we both teach at C.L. Smith School. And I brought in an article to my children. We have a little garden plot that we grow some vegetables in, and it was from Michelle Obama and talking about her garden in Washington, D.C. And she was talking about how the fifth grade class came and planted an orchard, and my kids didn't even know what an orchard was. And so then we talked about the fruit trees and everything, and they said, well, where was their orchard? And I said, well, we don't have one. And they said, well, we want one. So this is actually coming right from the students. They got into how could – I said, well, you know, we don't get this free. Everything costs money, and it can be pretty expensive to put in a fruit orchard, and then where are we going to put it? And we started talking about room and what their favorite fruits were and what was even a fruit. And I said, well, you know, I have to ask my boss, Mrs. Shields. And so Mrs. Shields came in, and they just attacked her and said, we want a fruit orchard. And she said, well, she needed to go to her boss, too. And so then she said, well, you know, we've got this teach grant, because the kids even came up with, they were going to bring toys from home and have a white elephant sale. They were going to bring lemonade on Fridays, and they were going to have a lemonade sale, and they were going to get this fruit orchard. So getting this $500, which is a very large amount for our proposal, and it's going to go a long ways. We've already had the grounds department out, and we've already found out that 12 feet of our swatch of garden is a water main, and we cannot get there. So the kids are learning from the basics of a grassroots movement to get something and what you need to do. So now we've already got a couple other sites. The kids go out and walk it, and, I mean, they're just learning how to do everything. But the thing that I think is going to be most empowering for my kids is they heard of something, they felt that they were justified in getting it, and they spoke up about it, and they went to the right sources, and they handled themselves very professionally at a ripe age of 6 and 7 years old. So I really appreciate this chance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Danielle Falk, and this is my first year teaching, so this is my first teach grant. I teach fourth grade at C.L. Smith, and I've received a grant for $411, and this grant is going to go towards a robotics club. C.L. Smith has joined forces with Cal Poly students, and those engineering students come over and teach our kids to build Legos. They build robots that can perform tasks. They completely computer program them, and kids are so excited about it. It reaches from 4th to 6th grade, and this grant will let us buy another Lego set and allow, the group's only 12 students right now, this will allow more students to join, and we only hope
to expand this robotics club because so many kids want to join. There's a whole waiting list. Kids are asking me every day because they heard about the grant, can I join robotics club? And so I have to wait, but they're really excited about it, and we really appreciate all that you've done. Thank you.
Members of the board, my name is Marley Schmidt. I teach first grade at Pacheco. I just want to thank the Teach Foundation so much. I received $600 for interactive read aloud books. These are books that go hand in hand with the comprehensive literacy model that the district introduced the teachers to a number of years ago. Monarch Grove sort of took it off as a pilot program. From there, this year we had Gaysu Pinnell, Dr. Matakovich, collaborated with Cal Poly to bring in Gaysu Pinnell as a speaker. She is a pioneer in reading recovery and early literacy. So got us all very excited about that. One of the components is read aloud books. What was great about her coming that day, one of the many great things, was she shared an articulated read aloud list, K-6, that's also aligned with grade level standards. So I was really excited to get that list, and that's what it's going to go to. It's a great way to teach almost everything having to do with language arts. We do author studies. We do genre studies. It's great for teaching vocabulary for primary language learners and secondary language learners, structures in language, structures in stories. And there are books that kids will be able to enjoy and benefit from years and years to come. So thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Hi, my name is Jill Banfield, and I'm here on behalf of the second grade at Pacheco Elementary. And I want to begin by thanking the Teach Grant Foundation for the time and effort that they put into fundraising so that we can be able to have projects and things like this come to our schools. Our second grade team wanted to install a piece of technology called an AverKey and some speakers so that we could allow, and what this allows is the things that are on your computer screen to be shown on your TV screen. And as we know, there are lots of neat things that can come onto your computer screen through United Streaming at the ETC portal, and then, of course, anything else that's on the web. And there are so many things that we could show our students to help them understand more about what's going on in our curriculum and in the world, and this will allow us to be able to do this. And so we thank the Teach Grant Foundation for giving us this grant of, and I didn't say how much, $638. Thank you.
And Jill, you have a donation in item 8 for $300 for a 6-in-1 solar kits and binary player robot. Is that yours too?
Oh, yeah. I've been kind of grant lucky this year.
Yeah.
We got another one to go to the Children's Museum downtown.
Excellent.
So, yeah, kind of lucky. Thank you.
Well, you've heard from most of our recipients. There are a few more that I'm just going to run down really quick. Morro Bay High School, they received a grant for $800 to help them with their composer in residence program. We've funded this before. You may remember that they actually make a trip up to Lake Tahoe, and then a composer comes back here in the springtime and participates with the kids and helps them put on their spring concert, so they get actual practice with a professional composer in their music program. Terry Jacobson received an additional grant that we partially funded in the fall to help her bring a local professional artist into her classroom to help with an actual art section of the curriculum, since Pacific Beach doesn't have an art teacher. So we helped fund that. Aaron Thompson, an agricultural teacher at Slo High School, applied for a grant to actually do an improvement at the entry. For those of you who have seen it, Tiger Plaza has continued to come right along, and it was recently paved, paver stones were put in place around the eucalyptus tree. Well, Erin has now applied for a grant that will let her students come in and actually, I believe she described it, they are going to do a planting in the letters of the high school that on that front hillside to complement the whole entry that's been redone. So we're very happy to let her students have some hands-on experience with beautifying the high school. Jody Evans received $150 for her FFA students to actually, they are charged with doing a community service project, and the students wanted to actually go out into the lower grades in the district and do some type of outreach. And so they're putting together what they call Ag in the Classroom. So we're providing them with seed money, it's kind of a little pun there, to go out and develop a program that will helpful, I think it's intended to help students in lower grades understand opportunities in agriculture and get interested in agriculture at younger ages. And Mr. Weinschenk, the Latin teacher at the high school, asked for a grant for the Cambridge e-learning course. He went to some type of professional seminar and was very excited about the opportunity to bring this e-learning course to his students. It's on a yearly subscription basis, so we've given him $529 for the first year subscription to this so he can use it to enhance his very, very successful Latin program at the high school. And last but not least, Paul Osborne, the choir director at the high school, is receiving an $800 grant to help the choir go on their Festival of Gold Spring Tour. So there you have it, and there's the whole list. Any questions or comments before I...
Chris?
Yeah, we're not having the telethon this year, and so my question is, what other opportunities will people have to donate to the Teach Foundation? Can you just give us some information on that?
Well, the board is currently examining our fundraising activities. We will be doing some fundraising. Expect to receive notification of our anticipated plan for that. But it's currently in the formative process, so we will be having a fundraising event this year of some sort if all comes to pass. But we're currently looking at our options. We're partnering with the Community Foundation to use their expertise to help us with some ideas that will hopefully bring in a lot of additional dollars. And similar to the area of this operating fund and things, we're basically trying to ramp up things and bring in additional monies. So we're looking at all possibilities, but we haven't exactly decided on the right forum yet.
You know, the board members count on that annual opportunity to make fools of ourselves. We haven't risen to the karaoke level again, but...
Well, if you have any particular talents you'd like us to profile, then let us know now, and we'll incorporate those as best we can.
I appreciate that, and I'm sure you'll be hearing from the board members. Terry, if a community member wanted to make a donation through the Community Foundation, how do they go about doing that?
The Community Foundation is the best avenue for that. If someone, let's see, I don't think I have in my stacks, if I've got a grant application here. No, I don't think I do.
They can go.
There you go.
Hi, I'm Judy Philbin.
I'm Judy Philbin. I'm the current president of the Teach Foundation, and I had told Terry I don't need to speak, but I would really like to say a couple of things. One, congratulations to all of you teachers who applied for grants. Good for you, and thank you for taking that opportunity to give your students additional opportunities. That's what we're here for. Particular thanks to Terry. You've all seen how efficient and dedicated she is to this program, and it makes a big difference for us. And thanks to the board for being so supportive as we go along. The board it's a small board, and we're all volunteer, and just decided that the telethon was not the best bang for the buck this year on what we could do, although we do miss having all of you make fools of yourselves. I mean, it's a big loss, but we hope maybe to pick that back up next year. It's not a big money maker. It's more of a showcasing. And so the donation, a couple of ways, theteachfoundation.org. You can donate through there, or the Community Foundation, which is SLOCCF.org, I believe. Yeah. Any other questions?
Excellent. Thank you.
All right.
Clarifies that. And congratulations to the grant recipients and to all the people out there who have supported the Teach Foundation in the past and helped to grow the endowment. And please keep up their generous help. And Terry, a great job again, as usual.
Well, it's always my pleasure. I'd like to give a big round of applause to all of our teachers. And it's so wonderful to be able to be a part of all the great things that they do. So thank you for the opportunity to come tonight and let you know what we're up to.
Thank you. You know, at C.L. Smith, are you guys going to have Joe Sable help with the orchard? Or, oh, yeah. Jill will make him. Okay, that's good. Thank you all. We appreciate you coming and sharing your grant news with us. And feel free to stick around for the rest of the evening if you like. Our next item on the agenda is... Oh, correspondence, and thank you, Catherine. You did a heck of a job. We do have correspondence regarding agenda item 6, and that's from Kent Taylor, and he is expressing his views on the use of recruiting firms and our search for our superintendent, which will be item number 6 on the agenda. And now the next item is public comment. Do we have any requests to speak? Public comment, we have no requests to speak, but if anyone would like to address the board on something that is not on the agenda, or if there's something on the agenda that you would like to speak to and it's more convenient for you to do so now, then we can do it now. And I don't see anybody stirring out there, so I'm guessing that we don't have anyone. All right, we'll move on to reports by student representatives. We have Harley Bonilla, and we have Francisco Castillo. And I'm going to start with Francisco because he's one of the mock trial veterans from PB. What role did you have this time? You were one of the witnesses. Yeah. The jogger, that's right. The jogger. Anyway, go ahead, Francisco. You have to turn on your mic, I think. That button on the top there. There you go.
There you go. Well, my name is Francisco Castillo, and I come from PV. Some of our updates, volunteers from California Rare Fruit Growers are coming to PV on March 11th to show our science class how to grow to graft fruit trees. And in our English media class, students are learning different types of videos, such as news segments, interviews, commercials. The goal of this class is to have completed projects shown on Cable 19, such as San Luis Obispo shows, which has broadcasted already and featured PV students as hosts. In English, students are being prepared to practice and enter the celebration contest. Students have been working on autobiographies, biographies, poetry, plays, and short stories to submit on the celebration. PV students finished the mock trial program a few weeks ago. We had one win and 3 losses, a couple of which were close. One student, Rick Diaz, won an award for excellence as defense student attorney. We will be having a thank you lunch for the attorney coaches, which is Duncan Skogsberg and Walter Millar. Yeah.
Thanks, Francisco. Who was the student defense lawyer?
Rick Diaz.
Oh, Rick. Great. He did a heck of a job.
Yeah.
It was very good. We were very competitive this year. There was a couple of scoring things that were within just a few points of the other team, and the kids, as usual, did a great job, discovered talent and ability and an ability to speak in public, which I know terrified a number of the students initially, but everybody rose to the occasion, and particularly Francisco. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
And Harley?
Yes, good evening, everyone. Can you guys hear me? Okay.
Is your mic on?
Yeah. Is it loud enough? Sorry. Okay. So this month is not quite as busy as last month, but we still have a few important things going on. Today actually was our 8th grade orientation day, where the 8th graders from Laguna come and they spend 1st through 3rd period with high school students, juniors and seniors, as tour guides. And they get to go visit classes and actually find where classes on their schedules are, which is always really helpful when you're a freshman to know where you're going. And this week, all week long, is Visual and Performing Arts Week, and so we have art displays around campus, and we also had a choir and band concert today during third period. Tonight, our girls' varsity soccer team went to the CIF semifinals for the first time in the history of our girls' soccer team. So they did lose, but it was a really good game, and we're really proud of them for making it so far. This month, March 6th, ASL is going to Deaf Day at Disneyland, and Ms. Falls earlier got the grant for that, so they're really excited to be able to attend that again. Next week are our second trimester finals. We have minimum days the 10th and the 11th, and the 12th we have no school because that's a teacher work day. This month, the 16th and 17th, we have the high school exit exam for the 10th graders. The 18th is the Principal's Parent Advisory Committee meeting with Mr. Jones in the library at 7 p.m., so all parents are welcome to attend that meeting. The 18th through the 20th, our Iambic Pentameter Club is doing their performance of Twelfth Night in the theater, and that's at 7 p.m., so that's supposed to be a really good performance, so anyone who wants to go can do that on those evenings. Our spring break is March 29th through April 9th, so that's a nice long break for us. And the last real thing that's happening this month is our spring sports is starting up because it's third trimester, so good luck to all of our teams. And I would just like to add a thank you to the Teach Foundation for all these wonderful grants they gave and for always supporting the teachers and students, not only at Slo High, but throughout the district. So that's about it.
Thank you, Harley. I suspect I should offer you, Catherine, an opportunity for equal time for the Slo High mock trial team. Did you want to make any comments? Or?
Since Will's here, since I did comment last time, Will, but I did acknowledge at our last meeting that Slo High School went to the semifinals in their mock trial team, and they put forth an excellent performance, and I believe I thanked all of the but it was all in the minutes, but I did thank the coaches, and so thank you for remembering.
I'd like to give you equal time.
Thank you.
Anyway, we appreciate the reports from our student representatives, and if you'd like to stick around and voice your opinion on any agenda items, we welcome your input. If you'd like to head for the door, we understand. We've got a busy day tomorrow, and appreciate you coming by. Thanks. Next, we will move to educational services update. Right, because we're skipping that.
Mr. President, we had some staff reports that we'd like to include at this point, if we could.
Okay, what did I do? Oh, I'm sorry. We weren't finished on the same, on the item one. Thank you. Go right ahead, Dr. Valentine.
Well, I just wanted to say that today was a completely happening day at San Luis Obispo High School. In addition to everything else that you heard Harley talk about, and I hope I'm not jumping the gun on this, but our campus security officer, Marvin Pesch, was recognized as the county school support and security employee of the year and is going to be advanced to the state level. He'll be nominated for state recognition, and that was really exciting. And then at the end of the day, we found out that our FFA chapter was chosen as the South Coast Regional FFA chapter of the year, and they will advance on to a state competition. So we had a soccer match. We had lots of recognition for our teachers and our kids and for our staff. All the students visiting from Laguna, we had a music assembly, and it was just a great day. So I wanted to share that with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Mr. Robinette.
Rick Robinette, Director of Personnel, and I'm glad Will did that because I was going to also make sure, if he didn't, to announce Marvin's candidacy for a state employee of the year. It's really exciting, and I know he'll be honored at the CSBA classified employees dinner as well. I am pleased to announce that we have completed interest-based negotiations and meet and confer meetings with most of our employee groups in the school district, And though there are some differences in some areas, obviously, with the different contracts, there is one salient feature that is common to all of them. So our superintendent, assistant superintendents, all management employees, all confidential employees, both of our classified units, the California Schools Employee Association and Service Employee International Union, have all agreed to a 0% raise for the current year in recognition of the district's financial situation. And so we are either have completed negotiations and have signed agreements or are in tentative agreements with all those groups.
Thank you, Rick. Let's see. Any other staff besides the educational staff that would like to make a report? Go ahead, Mary.
Thank you. Right now, we're right in the middle of Parent Conference Week at all of our elementary schools. It's so rewarding to have our teachers to be able to spend a significant amount of time with each of their students' parents to discuss their progress to date and to agree to work on accomplishing these goals together for the rest of the year. It does take the school working closely with parents to support the children in their success at school and at home. We know that having a parent involved with their student's education is a strong contributing factor to that child's success. So we want to thank our teachers for their preparation for this week of conferences. And since my voice is going, I'd just like to highlight the fact that Teach School is going to be visited by a team of experts relative to their distinguished school nomination. That's March 8th, and we hope to come back with good news to you at our next meeting. So we want to thank Teach School for being well prepared, and we wish them the best. Thank you.
That was painful to listen to, Mary. I want you to take care of yourself, okay? And I feel your pain, believe me. And speaking of feeling pain, next will be the status of the state budget by Mr. Miller.
Thank you. Tonight, we don't have any particular new information from the state, but we do have information about some specificity of what the state is going to do to us. And it has given us some definition to our problem for 2010-2011. And let me start, and what I'll do is delineate a couple of the areas that we now know what kind of a hit we're going to get and what the impact is going to be to us. But I would like to stress that this is best case scenario, that as we start learning things, we have the expectation that the state will continue in its attempt to balance its own budget by passing down the cuts to education, cities, other areas that rely upon the taxes that are generated at the state level. So this is best case scenario at the moment. But the very first significant piece that's come into focus is with the second interim, which you guys will hear about next board meeting. We now have a structural deficit in our own budget of $3.4 million. What that means to us is that as we take a look at the 09-10 budget, we have a $3.4 million deficit. We will transfer that budget as a working model into 2010-2011. So if we don't make any corrections to our 2009-2010 budget, we will transfer a $3.4 million deficit to next year. Very similar to the state's situation in the sense that they continue to ignore their structural deficit and keep passing it from year to year. We will have some ideas for you in future board meetings, but that's a starting point for us. The second significant issue that's come into clarity is our fair share of the revenue limit reduction that the state is doing to all districts. And what we know now is that our fair share will increase by $800,000 to $2.5 million next year. So that's the revenue limit's fair share of pain. In addition, the state has essentially reneged on a promise not to continue a cut they made in 08-09 and implemented on us in 09-10, which was a $250 per ADA charge. They're going to now make it $201 per ADA, and that's going to represent for us about $1,350,000. And then there was, and this was a surprise, I think, there was the rules that are going to govern our ARRA money, our federal money, that was the stimulus package that was passed to us from the feds to the state to us. And one of the rules that came at us unexpectedly is that by the end of the federal fiscal year, which happens to be September 30th, 2010, 3 months after we start our fiscal year, but nevertheless, within our fiscal year, we're going to have to spend 85% of that money, which is $1.5 million. We had anticipated being able to shift that money into 2010, 2011 and help absorb some of these cuts. But we're now going to have to repackage our spending budgets in order to dispense with $1.5 million of this ARRA money. That way we won't lose any back to the feds. The original thinking on the federal ARRA money was is that it was a two-year grant, and by the end of the second year we were supposed to have spent all of the money. But they're going to characterize it in the sense that Title I money has a 15% carryover limit. You can't carry over any more than 15%. So we got the money this year. We can only carry over 15%. That seems to be the language that is now being passed around. You add to that some of our operating increases that we're going to feel, utilities, benefits. You know, this year we had a flat line on our benefits from our health insurance provider, and as a consequence, they're taking a huge deficit in their sense of their performance and their profit and loss. They're going to be passing on an increase next year. Some conversation is about 12%. Some conversation is about 8%. If we figure an 8% increase, it'll cost us $825,000 as a district. I'll be going to Bakersfield in the 23rd of this month to talk about the actual rate increase. If it's more than 8%, it's going to put a big hit on a lot of school districts throughout, because they insure districts almost throughout the state of California. If it's 5%, which is what I hope that we can argue to a successful conclusion, we can mitigate some of this cost. But right now, we're looking at just an 8%, $825,000. You add it all together, and what we thought might be a $7 million problem for us next year is now $9 million. And let me stress, that's best case. We anticipate that there is more than likely going to be additional cuts made to our budgets by Sacramento as the time plays on. So I'll keep you up to date on that. We will be bringing forward budget items to you. Next board meeting is the second interim. It's essential that we adopt that and understand it, because it is a base for us to build the 2010-2011 budget. And then after that, we will be bringing together the best ideas from all of our interest groups within this district, curriculum council, the school site councils, everybody who is participating in this process. So you'll be hearing those particular thoughts in detail over the next 3 months. Thank you.
Russell, is there in this 85% of the ARRA money, this is one-time money, well?
It was one-time money, but we had hoped to be able to use a substantial portion, most of it, in 2010-2011 to mitigate what we knew was going to be an increase in our fair share of pain, the $800,000. That's now not going to be possible. Took a hunk out of our thoughts.
Is there a way that we can creatively spend that money that provides us some benefit in the 10-11 years?
It's federal money, and that's one of the problems. There's a supplant rule where the money that the feds give you, you can't use it to substitute for currently incurred expenditures. So if we wanted to buy books with – we're buying books with our own money right now. Okay, we can't use that ARRA money to buy the books and then not buy the books with our own money. So there's going to be a mix and a match problem. We're going to be very careful about not supplanting, because being found guilty of supplanting, you could lose your grant. So obviously we don't want to incur that issue. But the answer to your question is we're going to do the best we can. We're going to absolutely make sure that we don't have to send any of it back. There is an opportunity for a waiver. I don't know what the criteria is going to be for a waiver, but having never asked for one, I think we might be in a good position to get one. And if that's the case, then the next question is how much will they allow us to waive, and we'll find out and keep reporting back.
And waive would mean that we could use it in the 10-11
We could years. Get greater than 15% carryover.
And could you do a quick explanation of the governor's transfer of the highway money out of where it
gas
is
tax?
And that impact, the gas tax, and that impact on the Prop 98
yeah.
guarantee? I know it's complicated.
As it's constituted now, the gas is a tax that's fit within the Prop 98 formulation. So it for a gas tax, every dollar collected contributes about 40 cents, in theory, to education. The governor is reconstituting that tax as an excise. And an excise is not part of the Prop 98 formalization. So I think, and maybe Chris can help me mark it, $300 million hit to education because of the reconstitution of the gas tax?
Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact figure, but I think it would be a one-time hit for everybody, but more worrisome is that it would be an ongoing rebase of Prop 98,
yep.
which hurts everybody for years to come.
Yep. It takes the Prop 98 is a floor. It's not a ceiling, so it's a minimum amount of funding that districts can count on. And when they do this to you, they take the floor down, and it's not going to be restored. So it's not like they're promising to take it only in 1 year, which they've lied to us many times about. This is actually a move in order to pull a piece of the Prop 98 formula out of it, and then they get to keep 100% of the dollars.
And I think for me what's most galling about it is it follows the promise not to cut educational funding by the governor.
I think that when he made the statement that he was going to protect education, I don't know what he meant. But the bottom line is there's no protection within his budget proposals for education. There's an awful lot of hurt. $2.1 billion is the amount of cuts that he's proposing to education inside of his budget.
Maybe the dog and pony can explain it to us. So, a little inside joke, I'm sorry. any other questions by board members or comments?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Russell. We'll move on to a technology update. I don't see Amelia. Oh, there she is.
Good evening. My name is Amelia Samoz, and I am the Information Services and Technology Director for San Luis Coastal, and I'm delighted to be here this evening. I really appreciate this opportunity to share the highlights of what we're doing in IST and what we're planning over the next year. And I'll try to keep this brief so I can maybe answer a few questions at the end. IST handles the technical support for all the technology district-wide. Network infrastructure, desktop, notebooks, computer management, including software, online resources, communication systems, and database tools. I'll begin by saying that on behalf of more than the 8,000 staff and students in San Luis Coastal, I'd like to thank you, board members, for your role in providing the financial support required to sustain and grow a successful technology program. Our EdTech plan is a model for other districts and provides the vision and goals that meet the diverse needs of our students to maximize learning. While each department in our district has specific initiatives it needs to implement, technology is a key component in most, if not all, the initiatives in our district. And as you know, technology is dynamic, ever-changing in education, and directly impacts our students right now as well as their future aspirations and goals. Technology influences teachers and administration in their decision-making options and drives our business operations. I know I speak for our entire staff when I say that we have a passion for what we do. and a strong desire to improve how San Luis Coastal meets the needs of education in a way that will transform how we educate our students and better prepare them for the 21st century. San Luis Coastal has received statewide recognition specifically for our replacement cycle that empowers teachers with resources they can count on for teaching and learning in the classroom on a day-to-day basis. The PC replacement plan has succeeded in refreshing anywhere from 250 to 400 computers annually since its inception the summer of 2005. Every PC server and network component has been replaced at least once since that summer, and in some cases more often than that. The initial desire to maintain PCs on a four-year cycle, Plan A, has now been replaced by Plan B, a five-year cycle, and we're prepared to develop Plan C if needed due to the current budget crisis. I'm hopeful that Plan A will be restored once the district weathers the state fiscal crisis, but either way, the district-wide average for students to PC ratio has been maintained over the last 4 years at 3-to-1. In addition to day-to-day operations, there are several major projects in process in IST. Staff is currently preparing for the deployment of Windows 7 to any new PCs that will be purchased summer of 2001. Staff completed Windows 7 training in January, and a test lab is currently set up, among other things, to determine what percentage of the more than 300 software applications district-wide are compatible with Windows 7, and what percentage will become obsolete, need to be upgraded, or replaced. We're working to explore and test open source, free software, and web-based options. This could potentially save the district a substantial amount of money, as well as making a wealth of free software and online resources available to our students both at school and at home. We're also collaborating with Instructional Services on the new data director that will provide teachers and principals hands-on access to state test results and eventually benchmark data to make more informed decisions about what's best for students. In addition, we will upgrade the district-wide library system by the end of this month. The new system is web-based and will enable students to access a wider variety of library and online resources from home and school. We're also finished with the final phase of the UMAN redundancy project that will enable us to maintain our wide area network connectivity to most of our schools should any of the fiber connections be severed accidentally through a natural or man-made disaster. Network staff has received training and is using the latest virtualization technology to secure and consolidate our servers, which moves us closer to a green network infrastructure. We have also integrated blade servers, which run more efficiently, and incorporated a major electrical upgrade that provides a state-of-the-art battery backup unit to protect our network and better secure our data. We're halfway through the first year of implementing the state's new CalPAD system that you may have heard of, and where school districts are uploading their student profile data. This allows all California schools to access this centralized data warehouse to track student enrollment, dropouts, graduation rates, and much more. I'd like to assure you that whether we're in a fiscal crisis or not, IST is prepared and prides itself in providing superior technical service no matter what. We leverage the district's investment in technology to ensure safe and effective delivery of services that are aligned with the district's vision and goals. And with this in mind, in January, I emailed an online survey to the district-wide staff to see how we're doing. This feedback from teachers, administrators, and support staff helps my staff understand where we're being successful and what areas we could use some growth. So we had 295 employees that responded to the survey with the following results. 82% feel we're meeting or exceeding expectations on overall quality of service. 86% feel that our response time in resolving issues meets or exceeds their expectations. 88% are satisfied or very satisfied with the levels of expertise of our techs, and 98% agree that IST techs are always courteous and professional. So while we realize that we have some areas we can improve upon, overall we feel we're on the right track in providing quality service and support. I'd like to recognize my staff for their hard work day in and day out, as well as the ongoing support, not only from you, the board, but from staff, principals, district administration, Dr. Valentine, and my supervisor, Russell Miller, who gives me that day-to-day support that I need. What I want to convey is that in order to sustain and promote a successful program, it requires teamwork. A team that collaborates together to provide a classroom environment with the goal of increasing students' proficiency in 21st century skills. I encourage you to stop by and visit us in IST anytime, and I'd be delighted to share more and give you a tour of our facilities, show you our new battery backup unit and in our server room, how we're reorganizing it to better meet the needs of our district. So thank you for your attention, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Board members, let me know if you have a question, because we don't have a light for me to look for. And if we're required to go to Plan C, what's the replacement interval for Plan C?
Whatever the district decides is the priority.
Okay. So we have it.
Yeah, it could be anywhere between. Right now, if we would proceed as we had originally planned before we heard the latest news, we would have probably moved forward with replacing five-year-old computers that would have normally, in the original plan, been replaced last summer. So last summer we did a small percentage, probably 30% of them, and then we were going to go ahead and do the rest this summer. So.
And just so I'm clear, these survey results that you told us about, which are quite good,
thank you,
are based on the Plan A that we've been using.
Right, it's based on the history up until now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other board member questions or comments? Okay. Great. Thank you. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
And if we wanted to have a tour, we'd come here to district
yeah, just stop by IST. We're building I, and we'll be glad to show you around.
Great.
Thank you.
Now it's the truancy report. There you go.
Yes, the long-awaited truancy update. How's that? If we could just... One of the key issues of your study session on student drug and alcohol use surfaced the issue of attendance, or the lack thereof, as a contributing factor for our students as they deal with school and the realities of their life. That study session encouraged staff to engage in a series of discussions about attendance. And so our goal, of course, is we want our students at school and learning. So shortly after our study session, what came out was a very timely study, Truancy and Dropout in San Luis County, a strategic plan. And I'm happy to say that out of that plan were a series of recommendations, objectives for districts to follow as they take a look at attendance and the truancy factor. We have tonight John Alfers, who's been very patient in staying with us tonight, who's the co-chair of this task force and is kind of serving tonight as a resident expert in this area. And John, if you would you say a couple words of introduction to this plan, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you. I guess on behalf of the Truancy Dropout Task Force, I'd like to say that what we were hoping would come out of the whole plan was exactly what we're seeing here, was that there, you know, a heightened focus on the whole issue of truancy and dropout. So it's just wonderful to see this. One thing I would like to say, just by way of background, is that the task force really recognized that the foundation of a strong truancy dropout prevention is an excellent school program. All the things you do to, you know, reduce the education gaps and all the things you do to engage students, That's really truancy dropout prevention. And we didn't want to go there. We weren't there to tell schools how they should run good school programs. We felt, you know, schools are doing a great job. What we wanted to focus on were the areas where we felt schools really needed help from the community. So that's why our task force had probation, drug alcohol services, Department of Social Services, this interagency approach, so that, you know, we could look at some of those recommendations where the community can come in and help. And the last thing I'll say is that the recommendations, these weren't ones that we felt would be new and that you weren't already doing, but things that were probably already in place that you would build on. So we already know that you have a wonderful homeless outreach program and ask you to build on that. Or you already have a school site plan. So, you know, building on those things that would already be in place. So I just wanted to point that out because it, you know, may not have come across, but I wanted to, you know, just recognize the good things that are being done. So, and I'll be here to answer all questions or whatever.
All right. John's a great critical friend, so we appreciate him being here tonight. And what I'd like to know, and you all have a copy of this plan, and I'm sure you brought it tonight, so you have it as a reference. So as we kind of gear up to get our little camera together, I'd like to just move on with the presentation. And that is that there are three areas of focus relative to this plan: prevention, school intervention, and community interventions. And what's very important is that the task force is saying we need to structure our approach very carefully to address each of these three areas. So in the prevention area, the first objective they focus on for us is a school site objective. And what's really great is that our principals have talked about addressing this issue by incorporating an attendance objective in their school plan. Also, we have the second objective has to do with focusing on homeless truancy. You have given us support with a homeless liaison, as well as we've received a grant in this area. So our efforts are focused right now on dealing with our homeless students and the need for them to attend school. Their third objective has to do with pregnant teens and the dropout rate for pregnant teens. We do not see at this time that our... Here we go, you guys. I'm getting...
Thank heavens we stayed here where we went.
Come on. Cool. Okay. If you'll notice, I have some of the objectives highlighted, and those are the ones that as administrators and counselors that we've been talking over the last several months are kind of true objectives that we really can say to John and the task force that we are have focused our work and are dealing with that currently. Additional objectives have to do with our outreach efforts to our parents, the fact that we are continuing to file SCAR reports, so a heightened awareness in terms of our required responsibility, and then, of course, to provide our minors with prevention and intervention services. We also have currently at our school sites now a peer helping conflict resolution lead students, particularly at the secondary level. They also have an opportunity to work at the elementary level in terms of being mentors to our children. This hasn't necessarily been formalized, but we have the beginnings with student leaders at the secondary level, and we hope to develop out a peer mentoring program. In the area of community interventions, certainly school staff will receive ongoing training in this area, so there is heightened awareness about their responsibilities relative to attendance and interaction with families. They also have, the task force has an objective of utilizing the school attendance review board. You'll hear a little bit more about that in a few minutes from Chris Dowler, our coordinator of SARB. Also, there is a sequence that they're recommending to us that we conduct SARBs, pre-SARBs, and referrals to the County Truancy Board. So we are activating those resources as we speak. Now, to get to San Luis Coastal, it's important for you to know what truancy is. And a student is identified as a truant that is a student who's absent from school without a valid excuse 3 full days or tardy or absent more than 30-minute period during a school day without a valid excuse, okay? So that's 3 times being out of school. It was reported in the media that San Luis Coastal was above the county average in this area. As you can see, I have the percentages for the state of California, for San Luis County, and our school district. The other piece of the task force report had to do with the dropout rate. And basically, it is a student who has left school, and we have no reported information that tells us that the student is enrolled in school. Dropout rates in the county are reflected here with San Luis Coastal with a very low dropout percentage. We work on following our students and also getting to know our most at-risk students. So what are we doing about attendance? Well, we talked, I mentioned earlier that a recommendation was to focus on a school goal. We hold parent-student conferences. At those conferences, our parents and students and staff sign attendance contracts. We have listed here K-12 independent study agreement. The reason why our school district leads in truancy rate is that we do not require that when a family takes an extended time away from school, a vacation or whatnot, we do not require them to sign an agreement with us to complete their work, though our teachers have been very helpful when students take extended absences. So those absences have been counted as unexcused. We've had that discussion administratively, and we have the beginnings of an agreement that we would like to put in place in the new year that would require if you take an extended absence that you sign an agreement that you will the student will complete their assignments. And then in turn, Ed Code allows us to change that absence to excused. So though it won't be a money generator for us, it at least will formalize how important it is to be in school and also establish an agreement between the parent, the student, and the staff.
And Mary, just to make sure that we understand, by yes, money generator, since we're not a revenue limit district, being able to count those as excused absences doesn't make any dollar sense for us, right?
Correct. And it's been our practice then not to hold parents and students to a contract when they take an extended absence, though we have provided assignments and anything that they need and grade that work when it's returned. This formalizes it and as well gets back to looking at the unexcused absences and possibly being able to credit them as excused. We also have referrals to community agencies, and we have board policies and ARs that we update. And just for your information, we've just updated our administrative regulations to address the issue of students who have extended absences reportedly to be in the medical category. And we're requesting doctor's notes to be able to require students who have had extreme cases. We want them verifying a medical note for their absences. So that is what we are currently providing. Just to reiterate, This is our attendance profile, our protocol, letters to parents. Pre-SARB hearing is important in that series of meetings that are held. SARB meetings, a referral to the truancy board, and then a referral to the district attorney. Now we want to expand on our steps, and that's where Chris Dollar comes in. Chris comes to us from the county. Thank you, John, for lending him to us. But Chris comes to us with a wide background of interacting with school districts across the county. And what he noted is how important it is to have consistency in our practices in terms of how we interact, especially on the road to getting support from SARB. So, Chris, if you would share with us some discussions that we've had administratively and where we're going from here.
Chris, you wear a lot of hats, don't you?
Yeah, I do. So as Mary mentioned, my background is working with previous to this job was working with the County Office of Education and Court and Community Schools, and in that role I sat on SARB boards throughout the county, so Paso, Atascadero, and Lucia Mar, as well as San Luis Coastal. So I have a wide perspective on the issue of SARB interventions and the SARB process. So in my current role, as SARB coordinator, I'm working with administrators to develop a set of uniform policies and procedures to address student attendance and truancy. So one of the things that we're working with administration on is developing this uniform process, particularly around student and parent conferences and interventions before they even reach, hopefully the goal is to have a set of procedures before they even reach the straight of the point of being declared a truant. The first letter is typically sent after 3 unexcused absences. That's something that's stated very explicitly in Ed Code. And so creating uniform letters is also a big priority so that all schools are sending the same letter and getting the same message across, making sure it complies with Ed Code requirements. The second letter is usually the proposal. There's a degree of flexibility in when the second letter can be sent, but in a lot of districts, typically it might be sent after 5 unexcused absences. That second letter is basically a reminder to the parents and the families that the truancy is continuing past the point of the student being declared a truant, and there's usually a pre-SARB or a student success team meeting at that point. And so just implementing that at all the school sites to make sure that that happens immediately after the second or first letter. At that pre-SARB or SST meeting, then you would develop a contract, and we're also in the process of creating a fairly uniform contract. Then the third letter might be sent after the seventh. Well, that doesn't do it. 7th unexcused absence, or it could be, could be 3, 6, and 9. The numbers are different from district to district, but that's just a hypothetical example. And after that third letter, it declares a student habitually truant, and they're referred to the SARB board. Oh, thanks. Right now on the SARB board, what this has here is a list of the various departments that we have sitting on the SARB board. So there's a wide array of individuals that have graciously volunteered their time to participate in the SARB board hearings, including the probation department, court and community schools, Department of Social Services, the Women's Shelter, Children's Welfare Services, and onward. And there's a lot of individuals at those meetings. Typically, each meeting will have about a dozen to 15 community agency representatives. So it's a pretty impressive group. Yes, sir. Yeah. The SARB board is tasked with recommending different courses of actions. They can reach various levels, but typically it could result in a district attorney referral on the parent or family. It could result in a suspension of driving privileges, a deferred placement to community school, which means that the student might not be sent immediately to community school, and that allows the site administrator to further, work with the student and before they're sent off to an alternative school placement like community schools. It could be a referral to Pacific Beach as well, a referral to services, affirming family empowerment, which is SAFE, which is basically a wraparound team meeting with various other community agencies to talk about how to empower the family and help the family out. It could be other community interventions, like maybe Parks and Recs might have a resource on some bikes. And if the student's having a problem, I've seen them offer bikes to students to be able to help them get to school. From there, sometimes the STAR board will review cases 30 days, 60 days down the line and continue on monitoring the student performance and see if they've improved their attendance. Yeah, at this time, I'd like Amy Shields to come up and talk about what she's doing at the elementary school level in terms of participating in this process. Thank you.
Actually, what we ask Chris to do is think about those active administrators who are using SARB and getting results. And Amy came out on the top, so she's here to talk just briefly about her experience, which is a new thing for our elementary schools.
Good evening, Amy Shields, C.L. Smith. I think when we think about SARB, we think about high school. We think about kids not wanting to go to school and kids leaving and ditching and things like that. SARB at the elementary is very different, and I've always been pretty reluctant to utilize the services of the SARB board because I'm working with small children, and the idea of having a small child go to the SARB board didn't quite fit for me. Chris has enthusiastically pushed me all year to utilize the SARB board, and I'm happy to tell you that so far we've had a great success from utilizing the board. It's really working more with the parents and looking at the issues in the home that are keeping parents from getting their kids to school on time every day. It's working with issues, and you saw the list of the people who attend the SARB. Those are great resources for not only students, but for parents. And we've been able to connect parents with some of those resources through not only the SARB meeting itself, but the knowing that the SARB was coming if our parents didn't change behaviors about getting their kids to school. So I've utilized the SARB board once this year, and I have another SARB meeting coming up very soon. And what I've discovered is that our parents so far are seeing this as a help. It feels a little threatening because they know there's a lot of people that will be there that will be asking, why can't you get your child to school on time? But it's also seen as a help and a support for parents who may have issues in the home and need our support, need our community support to get their kids here to school. So at least so far, so good. So thank you.
Are we seeing the same kind of encouragement from Chris for other elementary sites?
It's across the board. We have it as an item on our principal's agenda monthly to talk about, and the progress that we're making is by sharing our stories, but more importantly, just realizing from firsthand experience what this is going to mean to our individual families. So I just want to say that we appreciate the work of the task force. I appreciate John being here. We appreciate the structure that they provided us in terms of thoughtful consideration for what those objectives should be. And though we're not getting to all of them right just yet, it's given us focus to work on prevention, school intervention, and community connection. So we're open for a discussion with you. We have our experts here, so please feel free. We look for your direction.
Missed the long microphone. I just personally want to say I'm very supportive of what's been going on, very supportive of the staff and the time and effort that's gone into looking at the truancy and absenteeism procedure within the county. I think that uniform policies will make it better for families and for students if it's even playing field across the district. I did have one question. One of the recommendations from the task force, the Children's Services Network task force, was to involve adult mentors as well as peer mentors. And I'm hoping that sometime in the future we get a chance to examine that. I know recently I've spoken to two of the Kiwanis folks, and they've both been sort of excited about bringing adults forward to help me.
Very good. We're involved with Big Brother, Big Sister right now, but that is one of the objectives that we have yet to address yet.
Thank you. I was actually going to make the same comment because
the mentor program was not highlighted under the adults. It was highlighted under the peers. And I was hoping that maybe we could look at that vis-a-vis the PTAs at the sites, the booster clubs at the sites. I think that the idea of pairing a parent who is having that kind of difficulty with a parent who has overcome some of those difficulties could be very beneficial and engage the parent in the school. I think you mentioned engaging students in school is a way to keep them in school. Engaging parents with other parents at school is also a way of establishing accountability. So look forward to that. Thank you. This is a great program. We're very, very grateful to you doing this. Thank you.
The issue of peer mentoring, that's the one recommendation that we realized that probably school districts would not have a whole lot already in place. That, you know, and so we were thinking actually maybe we would try to write for some grants and things to do that or try to get some money or leverage what you already have. But it was the one strategy that in all the literature that we searched that seemed to be the most promising. So I'm actually very glad to hear you saying that word mentoring, because that's the one that we just felt we needed to put in there, even though it, you know, maybe something that's not already started in districts.
Thank you.
Thank you. That, can you hear me? Maybe I'm out here. That was a great presentation. Thank you very much. I had a question though about the SAFE services. And that are referred to as wraparound services. To me, that's vague, and I wonder if it's possible, maybe Chris could be a little more concrete about what kinds of services we're providing.
Well, actually, I just attended a SAFE meeting. We had a situation with a family that was very much at risk, and so in working with the principal and the counselor and the parent, the parent has to volunteer to attend the meeting and has to be open to the to disclosing the family story and be open to receiving benefits from a wide range of agencies, from the women's shelter to child development center, across the board, mental health as well. And our little SARB group is kind of a mini SAFE group, but at the SAFE meeting, they have the head of mental health, they have the head of the women's shelter, and they're able to adjust the bureaucracy that people tend to go through in order to realize services. And what I watched in an hour was a woman being able to receive immediate counseling services from a mental health professional the next day. And so it's kind of immediate support. And we'd be happy to give you more information, but in a nutshell, it was very effective.
So what you're saying, Mary, is that if people are willing and able to be open about their situation, then we can expedite services to them?
With the heads of all the agencies present. Not to say that Chris isn't the head of his little agency, but, you know, it's the main people.
What you're saying.
We're being responsible for the procedures. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. What I have seen since this issue has come forward in the district is a heightened awareness. Every single newsletter has mentioned truancy. I think some more than once. And I know when my daughter's absent, I get some diligent phone calls, so the heightened awareness should reduce our truancy rate somewhat.
We hope that awareness will bring them to school, yes. Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else, any member of the public, want to comment on this item? Chris.
It's really important to consider SARB not an end, like just the board hearing. It's the process and the whole, all the steps and interventions that go along the way. So when you talk about SARB, it's not just that hearing. It's all the steps that lead up to that hearing and hopefully preventing that hearing from even taking place. So it's the whole overall process that's important to look at.
Thank you all very much. It was very informative. And we'll move on to item 6, which is the superintendent search. And John, thank you very much for attending tonight and providing your insights to us. We appreciate it. Thanks, Chris. Who's leading this one off?
I guess I'll start it off anyway.
It's only fair.
As the board is aware, you will be engaging in a search process to hire a new superintendent. There are a number of options that are available to the board. We've kind of described generically the different approaches that might occur if the board wished to engage the services of a search firm, which has been the practice, at least in the past couple or three searches that I've been aware of. The board can certainly entertain the notion of requesting proposals and selecting firms for interview and selecting a firm to continue that process. That might be very similar to what we did with the solar project. County Office of Education is capable of conducting such searches. The board has used certain firms in the past couple of searches and may be comfortable with that particular firm. This item is really here to sort of establish what the board sees as pros and cons regarding the best way to effect that search.
Okay. Any discussion about that, Chris? You look
like you're ready. Yeah, I would like to suggest that we do put out for bids for a search firm. I think our past experience with a search firm was that they did a couple of things for us. The first was that they were able to look for possible superintendent candidates. Not only were they able to help us find superintendent candidates and recruit for superintendent candidates, but they knew what the pool of superintendent candidates was out in California, or actually Oregon, as the case may be. They had a bead on when they advised us what the strengths and weaknesses of the candidates were, and I thought that was very helpful to us as well. I believe they helped us generate questions for the candidates when we did the interviews. They helped shepherd us through the process of the interviews. And then I don't recall if they actually helped us with the reference visitations, but they did good reference checks for us. I believe the last time we had at least two or three firms that were interested and actually made presentations to the board, and we did wind up choosing the one that with the Dr. Valentine search that chose Dr. Ladd. I know there are several search firms out there. Like I said, California School Board Association is not one of them. They have no interest in doing this anymore except for some guidance for very small school districts. I would not want to put this on Mr. Robinette's plate because I think that's ultimately where it would land. Not that I don't have confidence in Mr. Robinette. I am sort of have some trepidation about having him be responsible for the search of somebody who would ultimately be his boss. So I'm a little concerned about that. I'm concerned about having the county office do it. I think the county office is up to its neck in things right now. We're facing the same things that many of the school districts are facing. The special education transfers, for example, are keeping our human resources department very, very busy. And so my recommendation would be to cast our net, our search for a search firm company, have them make presentations to us, and then think about what their costs would be.
Excuse me. I also would support using a firm to help us find a superintendent, along with the list of things that Chris mentioned. There's also the ability sometimes to find somebody whose personality, each district has a personality, and to help us find that match. And so I would be very interested in talking with the search firm.
Catherine, did you?
I have not been through this process before, but I would like to just comment on a few things that are mentioned in Mr. Kent Taylor's letter, the correspondence that was put before us tonight, and I've just quickly looked over this. I just want to share this for the purposes of conversation. Mr. Taylor is on our Personnel Commission, and his observations are in this letter that as a county administrator who has been involved in doing numerous searches for various employees, he has found that recruiting, that executive recruiting firms are not always particularly helpful in the process, in that many of the ways of getting the word out for this job are available to us through the grapevine, through some of the professional newsletters and papers, et cetera, and that is obviously a cost factor, and that it's something we should consider possibly doing through the County Office of Education, through the personnel department in-house, but I just wanted to share his thoughts about, you know, how, what, and discuss that a little bit about how important is it to use a search firm to fill this position.
Bill?
Also my first time going through this process as a board member. I have some concerns about spending $25,000 when we are talking about our budget problem. I'm not sure what the county office offers, and I'd like to have some more information on that. But going through the AXA magazine, and I've gone through the last two or three, I would say about 50% of the superintendent searches are through some company, and about another 50% are either in-house or through the county office. So I'm not entirely sold on going through a consultant, but you guys have swayed me a little bit in that way.
Well, I'll jump in here. I will point out that Mr. Taylor's observations are not from within the educational system. It's city administration and public administration. This is my third or fourth one of these. The only caveat I have is I wouldn't use the one that hired Russell again. But I was actually on the visitation team that went up there, and everything they said about him was true. But it turned out they were good things. I'm a little concerned that the County Office of Education might be a little parochial. I do think the biggest part of this is not just hiring or not hiring a search firm. It's the board having an idea of what we want in our next superintendent. And that's a discussion that I think we need to have. Having said that, though, I think you get cast a wider net, and you have people who really, as Chris indicated, really do know the talent pool that's out there. And when we hired Dr. Ladd, we had some specific emphasis that we wanted. They were primarily, we were looking for someone with financial budget experience, and I think it was a good match for us at that time. When we used the search firm and ended up hiring Dr. Valentine from within our own organization, the board felt, and I think correctly so, that we'd at least, prior to the current storm, that we needed more emphasis on curriculum and that we had gotten a lot of our financial house in order and made some hard decisions that put us in a good position. So I guess I'm more in favor of using a search firm, but I'm very much... I think that the first question is, what does the board want in our next superintendent? So I would support Chris's idea of using a search firm, but I think we need to have a conversation among ourselves about what we want.
If I could make one more thought, have one more thought about this, I wouldn't be surprised if, for example, we went to the County Office of Education and they charged us for the services. They have budgetary constraints as well. I would suggest we put it out to essentially a bid process. And if the County Office of Education wants to do this, then I think that they could make a presentation to us. Because one of the things I think that we looked at before was not only what the cost, but what the services that the company provided. And as I'm
thinking back, I think there were things that they did, other things like go through and survey the community to help engage the community in the process of finding the superintendent, which I think is going to be very important for us, not only what the board wants, but I think we need to hear from our community partners as well. And I think how that process, the whole process, is managed will help us get the kind of superintendent that we've been used to and that we want to continue to have.
Possibly the most, the best investment that we can make, and the return on the cost to hire a search firm may come back very quickly.
I agree with you, Mark. And also, we want to be looking for a superintendent who's going to be with us for a while. We've been very fortunate in that respect, and that is part of having insights into both the talent pool and what's the general state of public education and personnel needs are out there. And I agree, Chris, that we do need to have a presentation. Anybody who's interested in doing this, we put out an RFP and have them make their presentation. I don't know, who have we not heard from?
You. Oh, I'm sorry, Marilyn, I'm supposed to say you.
Oh, okay, my turn. I'm just busy listening. I agree that going out for proposals for a search firm is the right thing to do. I mean, in my opinion, it's the right thing to do. The Russell's bad news on the budget notwithstanding, I think we are still a very desirable district for candidates to want to come to. And I'm just unclear on who would put out the RFP. Whom? We Ed, we Russell, we...
Well, I think probably we, our Human Resources Department, would put it out in the name of the board.
Mr. Robinette's shaking his head yes, that he would, it would fall up on his shoulders to do that. I think I agree that I want to look at candidates, you know, to get a good selection of candidates, we're going to have to get a search firm, I think, who knows what's out there in the market and can try and get a good fit for us. So I support that. And I would shut this off if I could.
And Ellen, there's no pressure. I mean, I commend you for following the first rule of new board members. Talk little and listen a lot. I don't know that I did that, but I admire it. But if you have any sense of how you feel about it, please.
I would agree with finding a search firm.
Your brevity is appreciated, Phil.
No, I'm sold. You guys sold me. So, being the only guy out there, but I think in my last district, when we wanted to cast a wide net, the Teachers Association was banging on board members' doors to say, make sure you cast a wide net. And we ended up going through a CSBA search firm, which was no longer available, but it was with great success. So
do we want to give board direction to staff to draft an RFP? I'd also like, with the board's agreement, to see the RFP specific as to what steps they would take to discern the community's interest in our new superintendent.
Question on process. We may get several firms. Does the board want to select a subcommittee, for instance, to screen for a smaller number to actually do presentations? Or do you want to hear from everybody? Yeah, that's the concept.
Can we make that decision after we know what kind of response we
certainly
get? I don't mind using a subcommittee to do a preliminary cut, but even if we have five or six applicants, I think the board can digest that without having to use a subcommittee.
Got it.
But I'm open to the idea, depending on how many responses we get. Is that all right with everybody? Okay. All right. So any other direction needed, Dr. Valentine? Okay. We will move on then to the action consent agenda. Please indicate which items you'd like pulled, if any. Approval of item 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 8, acceptance of donations. Item 9, disposition of surplus property. Item 10, approval of purchase orders. And item 11, approval of warrants and payroll. Okay. We're going to pull 9. Anybody want to make a motion on 7, 8, 10, and 11? Go, Ellen. You do it. Come on. It's your first motion. I'll move approval of items 7, 8, 10, and 11. Maybe Ellen would second that motion. There you go. Okay. Motion by the chair, second by our newest board member, to approve items 7, 8, 10, and 11. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Marilyn?
Thank you. On item 9, I had a question about item 9 is disposition of surplus property. Item 2, workstations not ergonomically correct and requesting surplus disposal from the personnel department. Could you explain that to me, Mr. Robinette, please?
He's our ergonomic expert.
Mr. Guy could probably explain
that.
All right.
We had two workstations where employees were having difficulties.
We had two workstations with employees having difficulty, and we brought it to the attention of the district and through SIPE, and were able to get, I think, utilizing entirely safety funds, new desks and chairs for two of our employees. So we have the old stuff to get rid of.
That's correct. We're using funds that are established through the 3% Workman's Comp Insurance Rebate Fund, money that we get back by pursuing all the steps required to fulfill that obligation.
The idea of that is that if we take steps to prevent future workers' compensation claims.
Absolutely.
What we've done is engaged in a multi-year program of spending the 2% rebate on workstations, and we've obviously eliminated the worst ones first with the goal in mind to cut back on our workers' comp claims. Carpal tunnel, repetitive movements, things that have injury potential. And this is a result. We end up with some surplus workstations. Obviously, they have no value because we couldn't put them anywhere without causing injury, potential injury, so now we want to give them away.
Some of them are garage sale items that people have procured for their offices.
Oh.
So it's not all high-quality stuff by a long shot. And the average ergonomic physiological correction is about $30,000 if someone has to get, you know, medical corrections, so it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, Marilyn. I'm pleased to hear about the program that you all are engaged in.
Yeah, that was good information, and I'm glad I did bring it up. And now that I understand it totally, I'll move approval of item 9.
Motion by Marilyn, second by Chris. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Let's see. Advanced agenda. Did you want to bring that one up? Next time. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Anybody else? Dr. Valentine.
I just wanted to remind the board that we'll be holding a staff orientation for Mrs. Sheffer that board members are invited in a certain quantity.
Okay.
And the meeting is next Tuesday at 5 o'clock, a week from today.
All righty. And let's see, reports by board members. Great. Phil, then Mark, then Chris.
I wanted to start by saying education is important. I know it sounds silly, but sitting here, it's easy to see that education is important, and it's important for our kids. However, Sacramento, they don't understand that education is important. They may say they do, but the message they're sending by cutting teachers throughout the state and cutting our budgets throughout the state shows me that they do not value education. On March 4th, teachers and the communities encouraged to wear blue. Blue for the budget blues. And let your legislators know that education is important. Stand outside Abel's office. Stand outside Sam Blakely's office. Wear blue. Honk your horns. Let them know that education is important. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman.
Okay. No. This feels petty now. I guess in following on that theme, I just recently, with the state PTA, we did a ledge advocacy up in Sacramento. I was able to visit Senator Maldonado's office and Assemblyman Blakely's office, where we got to talk to staff people, and so sort of a sign of their attention to public education. In Senator Maldonado's office, the comment was, well, we're kind of tied up with the lieutenant governor thing. And in Mr. Blakely's office, it was not the highest priority. So it was a little disappointing. I also was able to attend a community meeting out at Baywood recently. There's been some vandalism and in the community and at the school site, and excellent meeting, about 20 people from the community. The sheriff's department did the presentation, and some steps are being taken. One of the things that was most sad that I heard during this, and I didn't know it going in, was at Baywood, each sixth grade class gets to put a mural on the wall, and some of the vandalism and graffiti was so bad that one of those murals had to be covered. So that was some sad news. And then I did attend the cyberbullying workshop at San Luis High School, which, God, the parents were just chomping at the bit to ask questions and got a lot of good information.
Chris. And I just want to say I've been involved in a two-day workshop on facilitating IEPs, and a couple of staff members from San Luis Coastal were there, and I want to just mention them. Naomi Blakely was there, Ian Trejo, and Joyce Hunter, and these are techniques that will help provide positive experiences during IEPs and get to the kind of conclusions that everybody on the team would like to see. So it's great to see our staff involved in those things.
Thank you, Chris.
Me. I just wanted to thank Mr. Angel for inviting us all to the drumming dinner at Pacheco, and I loved it. I got to share some burritos with some of the Pacheco families, and unfortunately my son's field trip bus got in early and I had to leave before the drumming began, but it was very thoughtful of you to let us know about that, and thank you, Phil.
I agree. All right. Seeing no one else raising their hand, why don't we adjourn? We are adjourned.